Welcome, everybody. Once again, it's time for the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The Coaching Perspective with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul, the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, am I going to come out and people are going to hear me and see me again here? Yeah,
I don't know if they can see you, but they can hear you. Well, look, welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation. And I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our topic for today is How to Sell Without Selling. That's kind of a weird title, but that's what I came up with. You know, all jobs require some level of selling. And yet most of us never wanted to be a salesperson and have received little training on how to sell. In fact, to be truthful, our image of the typical salesperson is so negative that not only don't we want to sell, we also don't want to be sold too. Well, we're going to bust some of those sales myths here today on the show and show you how to think of sales as a partnership and an opportunity to help someone. Well, also, if we can find the time here, explore some of the similarities between sales, customer service, and networking. So let's get right to it. Well, look, all of us are salespeople. You say no? Well, we're selling all the time. I don't mean that we all have a job with the title salesperson. In fact, that's not what I'm going to focus on today at all. I'm really more interested in talking about the sales work that us non-salespeople do daily. What is that sales work? Well, if we're trying to solve a problem that someone has, or if we're trying to influence someone to make a decision, then in my definition, you're selling. So let me start off by sharing with you two personal examples of a traditional sales situation, and then break down why one works so well for me and the other was so difficult for me. Now, while these are more traditional sales examples, I think they clearly illustrate the problems and the myths and the assumptions and the challenges we face in that daily non-sales work that we all do that I'm going to call sales. Well, let me start off by recapping the easiest situation I ever had from a sales point of view. It was when I owned a residential construction company. We built individual homes. We built track homes all through the five-county area here in Southern California. And we had our own sales force. The sales force would staff the model homes, and you're probably all familiar with that, except for our listeners on the East Coast. I don't know how you do it there. But we would build model homes. We'd put the sales office in. The salespeople would be there, and we'd advertise, and people would come out and go through the models, and we would sell them a house. Well, occasionally, I'd have to fill in for a missing salesperson. Even though I don't see myself as a salesman, these times were lots of fun for me. I loved meeting the potential home buyers, showing them around the model homes, and proudly pointing out the things that we did different from other builders. Generally, they were pleased to be shown the product or be walked through the model homes by the president of the company and not a salesperson. As a result, the conversation was one of sharing my knowledge of the product and learning what they were looking for in a new home. It was not so much one of trying to get them to sign a contract, although obviously that was the end goal, but not the thing that was number one in my mind as I was having these conversations, because I had other people that did that. In fact, many times the home I was showing them wouldn't fit their needs for various reasons, but it was still a fun conversation. I got to meet new people. I got to create relationships. It was rewarding to hear them say good things about the houses. It was educational to find that some of our marketing assumptions were totally wrong or maybe totally right. But to my surprise, it was a great sales opportunity for a person, myself, who would have said, I'm not a salesman. No way do I ever want to be put in that position. Well, that was the easiest sales situation I ever had. In fact, it was so easy that until I was preparing for today's show, I never thought of that situation as an example of me selling. It was just something fun that I did occasionally. Well, okay, let's look at the other end of the spectrum. The most difficult sales situation I ever had was, for 20 years I owned a franchise business called Renaissance Executive Forums. We would put together, I would put together, groups of 10 or 12 business owners, presidents, owners of their own company, as a mastermind group. They would meet once a month, function like an advisory board for one another, and help solve problems and challenges that they were facing. And they would pay a fee for that. Well, eventually, the way it worked, eventually, after a lot of cold phone calls, I would get an appointment with the president of the company to sell him or her on the idea of joining one of my executive forums. Usually, the appointment was set up by the president's assistant. Okay, let's be honest. I hated those meetings. I always felt like I was interrupting their busy day, taking them away from more important things. I always had flashbacks of how I felt every time when I had my building company, my secretary would tell me there was a salesman that I was meeting with. It was like, how did somebody slimy like a salesman slip through the system and get in here and ruin my day? I have busy things to do. So there I was on the other side as the salesman. I felt like a used car salesman begging them to listen to my pitch and not run off the car lot without buying. Usually, they didn't even know why they were meeting with me or what I had to offer. And so their impatience came across. And as a result, I rushed the conversation to tell them all the reasons they should join before they cut the meeting short. It was a surprise that I ever convinced anyone to join. But I did. You know, both of these examples are traditional sales situations. But what I want to talk about would apply just as readily to your daily interaction with your peers, your customers, your employees, even to social situations. So let's kind of break them down and look at what made those two sales events turn out so differently for me, and how do we need to prepare for these types of sales conversations? And I have 9 points that I want to go through. So the first is, number one, is have a conversation. Don't make a sales pitch. You know, the key to any sales conversation is that where your goal is to develop a relationship with the other person. Notice, I didn't say your goal was to get them to sign a contract. Your goal wasn't to get them to take money out of your pocket. The goal is to develop a relationship. And why is that so important? Well, most of today's selling is more than a one-time visit. Our buyers are very discerning today. They're very educated. They come to you having done lots of research. They're going to leave you and do even more research. So the thing is, the sales conversation is not usually one conversation that starts at 4:02 and it ends at 4:10 and we've made a sale or we haven't made a sale. It may be something that drags on for a long time. So to have that kind of conversation, that kind of real conversation, you have to do something different than the standard sales pitch. Let's go back to the Renaissance example I talked about. And one of the problems that I was having was that when I bought the franchise, they were nice enough to give me 2 weeks of training where I had to memorize a standard sales pitch that screwed me up for years. So rather than having a conversation with the other person, I was constantly just looking for an opening where I could give them my pitch. As a result, I don't think it ever sounded sincere, and it hardly ever motivated anyone to buy. Now, the opposite of that is, while in the home business selling example, I was just having fun, sharing my passion for the houses with another person whose opinion I wanted to hear. I approached it as an opportunity to show off my homes and to learn more about how the potential buyer felt about those houses and whether there was a match. It became an interactive conversation, and it developed a relationship, sometimes that led to a sale, sometimes that led to referrals, sometimes it led to supporters, and you know what? And sometimes it led to a new friend. number one issue here in having these non-sales or sales conversations is we need to have a conversation. We need to drop the pitch. We need to think about, are we creating a relationship? All right, let me talk about the second thing that I think is critical here, and that I'm labeling as experience. You need to establish your credentials early in the conversation to get the other person's attention. You know, in the home building example I gave, once they found out I was the president of the company, they treated me with more respect than they generally would give a salesperson. Probably more respect than I deserve. Their assumption was, if you're president of the company, you must know everything there is to know about how to build houses. And as I demonstrated the product, only then did they realize that I knew what I was talking about from firsthand experience, and we entered into a conversation about the house, about the construction methods, about the decorating, about the way it would live, about the options that they could use. There was no memorized pitch because everybody was treated as a unique individual. Well, in the Renaissance example, my only way to establish that credibility was to tell them that, well, for years I belonged to a group like this, but I'm kind of new to facilitating them. Well, this didn't work until I had basically lucked out and established a few groups and put some years behind me in that business, and then it was a different story. Even then, since I was selling an intangible, that's totally different than selling houses where they could see it, I needed to share success stories of my running a forum and of people participating in a forum for them to begin to start to trust me that I knew what I was talking about. You know, it may sometimes feel like you're bragging, maybe it is, but people want to know that they're dealing with an expert. It changes the way they hear what you're saying. Current example, even after 20 years having my own coaching business, I always manage to let the other person know that I'm a master certified coach by the International Coach Federation, who has 25,000 members worldwide, of which 8,000 are certified, of which only 600 are master coaches, and which only about 300 are in the United States. Now, that's bragging, but that's also establishing my credentials. And by the way, I've led over 2,500 individual or group coaching sessions. Now, I'm proud of this, but they need to know this because it's part of the buyer's sort of mental checklist is this person qualified enough for me to do business with them? Do they know what they're talking about? Or should I look for another salesman? How many times have you walked into a store or walked onto a car lot only to walk away from the salesman that approached you because you didn't feel they knew what they were talking about? So establishing your credentials is key early on. The third thing, know your product. You know, we kind of talked about this when we said experience, but what I want to emphasize here is not just knowing your product or your service, but I want to emphasize the issue of being prepared with the answers to the questions that you can pretty well guess are going to be asked of you. In the home example I gave you, I knew the product so well there was almost no question that they could ask that I couldn't answer about the construction of the home. But they were going to ask me other questions. Where's the nearest hospital? Where's the fire station? What are the schools like in this neighborhood? Can you tell me about the taxes? Is this a Mellow Roots district? There were lots of other things that I knew would come up in the conversation that had nothing to do with my specific product that I needed to be prepared for. You know, in the Renaissance example, looking back on it, I know I didn't spend enough time anticipating what was going to be asked. As a result, every sales situation was a new day for me. You know, it was not Groundhog Day for sure. Eventually, through repeated sales calls, some of which were successes, some of which were failures, I eventually learned and what the sort of standard questions were that people would start to ask, and I became skilled at answering those. But I have to tell you, that was an expensive way to learn that. So what's a better way to learn it? role-playing. Sit down with somebody else and make a list of every question that a typical buyer might ask of you or your product or your service. And then how would you answer that question? If you don't have the answer, and I'll guarantee if you're doing a good job of listing the questions, you don't have the answers right off the bat to all of them, go get the answers. Somebody in your company, somebody somewhere knows the answers to those questions. So do a little bit of role-playing. You know, while I mention role-playing, lately I've been exposed more and more to improv, and I'm beginning to think I need to sit down and take an improv lesson. Improv, people who have studied improv and are using it are so much better at thinking on their feet, at being able to ask questions, being able to handle the unexpected easily, quickly, and confidently. It's just amazing. I think it's really going to have to put it on my bucket list here. Well, let's go to one more before we take a break here, and that's handling objections and follow-up. You know, experience will help you to handle questions, but it won't help you to handle objections. And what do I mean by that? Most objections that people raise in a sales environment are not the real issue. And you have to learn to dig for the truth behind the statement. And you're going, oh, what are you talking about, Doug? Well, let me just ask you, when was the last time you told somebody, well, I couldn't afford that? And then you turned around within a week and you spent twice that amount of money on something else. It wasn't because you couldn't afford it. It was because the value hadn't been established in your mind for you to be willing to part with your money to buy that. Digging for the truth as to what's behind the objections is what is really key. This takes some diplomacy. You got to be careful how you frame your response so that they don't get the impression that you're saying they're lying. But you're asking instead, and not in these words, but you're asking instead, if we could take care of that issue, is there anything else that's keeping you from buying? Now, I hate it when salesmen ask me that question exactly that way. Paraphrase. Don't do it that way. And remember that most sales are lost at the beginning of the conversation, not at the end when you've truly engaged the prospect. People walk away because they don't think you know what you're talking about, because they don't like you, because you haven't established your credibility. If you've been talking to them for a period of time, now the only reason you're going to lose the sale is because there isn't a good match. Let's say you didn't make a sale. So what do you do after the conversation if it didn't result in a sale? Well, I'll tell you what you don't do. You don't chase the person with repeated phone calls, voice messages, text messages, and emails. When I was doing the Renaissance business, people would say no to me, or typically they didn't say no. They said, let me think about it. And then I would continue to send them daily phone calls, voice messages, weekly emails. I mean, it got to where, you know, I'm sure I was at list up on the board that Doug Gefeller, stalker, dump every call that he makes to this number. So when you're talking to people, if possible, schedule a method and a time for follow-up. See if they really want you to follow up. And then add them to your SIT program. SIT program. What's a SIT program? S-I-T. Stay in touch. Everybody in every business should have a SIT program. It is a systematic way for you to track the people that you meet and to track how you're going to stay in touch with them, how you're going to maintain the relationship. And the assumption here is that sales that we're talking about is not a one-shot deal. It's about developing a relationship. And relationships take work and they take time. You know, I have a bunch of guys that I went to high school with, and we had a group, wasn't a gang, but we had a group and a club. And one of the guys in that group is absolutely my hero in terms of SIT programs. You know, this is many, many, I'm not going to tell you how many, but it's a lot of years later. and he has everybody's contact information. He's in touch with us on a regular basis. He knows who's getting married, whose kids are getting divorced. He knows who's sick. He knows who's moving. He arranges annual, semi-annual meetings. Let's get together and have lunch. Let's have dinner. Let's get the spouses and do a bay cruise. Let's go to San Francisco and see Alcatraz. This guy in his personal life has the world's greatest SIT program, and as a result, he is really good at maintaining friendships. When he calls, you take his call because you know he's interested in you. Are you doing that in your business? If he can do it in his relationships, in his social life, why can't we do it in our business? You can do it with newsletters. You can do it with white papers. You can even set up a series of pre-designed, quote, personal emails, so that if I call on you tomorrow and you tell me no, I go back and enter your name in the computer, and the computer now automatically produces a form letter with your name and some other more personal information once a week for the next 6 weeks to stay in touch with you. Or maybe it's a quarterly newsletter, or maybe it's just that I've identified that what you're interested in is you're a basketball fanatic. So every time I see something about basketball, now that's not a good example because there's too much going on about basketball. But every time I see something about that, I drop you an email and say, hey, did you see the results of the tournament? What did you think? Did your team win? I once had a call from a company president's assistant 2 years after I called on him. And he had said, no, he didn't want me to come to do, he didn't want to buy at the time. He didn't want to join the group. He didn't want to be coached. But I put him into my SIT program. I sent him emails. I sent him weekly newsletters telling him about the radio station and the great guests that we have on it. 2 years later, his assistant calls me saying, would you please come back in and talk to him because I think he really needs your help. What did the SIT program do? It kept my name in front of them. They didn't forget, so that when the moment was right, when there was that brief period of time when they were ready to buy, my name was the first one that they thought of. That's what your SIT program's supposed to do for not a whole lot of effort. Well, look, let's take a quick commercial break, and then I'll be right back to finish this up.
Do you have a desire to be a part of a conscious community? I mean a community of people who get together with the purpose of strengthening their awareness muscles, deepening their relationships, and striving for the extraordinary? Check out how to get started at productivelearning.com. We are a unique self-development company, and we believe that we all have the innate ability to create and live the lives we truly want. But we also know that ability needs to be nurtured and developed. That's why we offer over 40 different workshops to our conscious community, workshops that intentionally stretch you beyond your comfort zone towards what you truly want. Our workshops are not ordinary. We take journeys across the world from exotic scuba diving trips to rich cultural getaways. And we offer amazing workshops right here in South Orange County. Join us and find out just how extraordinary life can be. Go to productivelearning.com today or call Lisa Reed at 949-234-0628. To see how you can be a part of our conscious community, that's productivelearning.com or 949-234-0628.
And now back to Doug and his discussion.
Okay, and that was Lisa Reed, my good friend with Productive Learning, so give her a call. Well, look, we're talking about sales for the non-salesman, or selling when you're not selling. You label it how you want it. And we've been going through what are some of the keys to doing this. We talked about having a conversation, not making a pitch, about the value of your experience and establishing your credentials. We talked about knowing your product, and we talked about handling objections and how to follow up. Let's just touch briefly on technology. Be sure to find out what's the level of technology that this person or their company is using. Now, what I'm talking about there is if you're going to provide products or services, they need to be user-friendly. So you don't want to find out that you're on a Mac system and you continue to communicate with this person with stuff from your Mac and they're on a PC system and they can't ever read any of your stuff. Or their Outlook calendar doesn't pick up any of your Mac calendar stuff. Find out what it is. Find out what their preference is for how they want to be communicated with. You know, I was in a store today. They said, do you want us to print out a receipt or do you want us to email it to you? Hey, email it to me. I lose the receipts. The emails I can save. Do they want email? Do they want text? Do they want phone messages? What's the best time of the day for you to contact them? You need to get clear on technology. It only takes a minute. It seems like a small item, but you know, it's so depressing to think that you've been communicating with somebody for weeks only to find out they never got any of your messages because you had the wrong email address and they didn't bounce back. All right, let's talk about no excuses. You know, if you're working with an existing client or a past client, do not hesitate to stand up and admit to your mistakes. The key word there is your mistakes. Let me clarify. Your mistakes means that anything that the company did wrong or another team member or another employee did wrong, if you're the contact with the client, that it was your mistake. Don't try to pass it off on somebody else. You're the point of contact. Nobody wants to see you start to squirm out of taking responsibilities. You know, you talk about squirming out of things. I love to tell this story, and I have to just tell you, I checked again today to verify that this is, in fact, a true story because it's become almost urgent urban legend. It's one of the most well-known customer service stories around. It's a Nordstrom story. You know Nordstrom, the upscale retailer, apparel, shoes, and accessories. Well, it's a story about a man who went into Nordstrom in Anchorage, Alaska to return a set of tires. Now, Nordstrom doesn't sell tires. The customer had bought the tires at the store that occupied the same space that Nordstrom was in years before. Still, after some discussion, the Nordstrom sales manager decided to allow the customer to return the tires and gave him a full credit. Not only did they keep a customer for life, but this story has become an urban legend that set the bar for client relationships for Nordstrom's forever, all for the price of a set of tires. They couldn't have bought the publicity that they got from this stunt. They couldn't have bought the goodwill. They could have conducted training sessions for their employees from now till the cows came home, and the employees never would have got it except for this story, the Nordstrom's retail store that took back the tires, all because they wanted to support the customer. That's what we're talking about. I don't like the idea of clients taking advantage of me, but at the same time, let's not, you know, be picky about this. This guy was making an honest mistake. He thought he bought the tires there. He wasn't trying to pull a fast one on Nordstrom's. Nordstrom's was smart enough to recognize it and took care of it. You have got to be smart enough in your dealings with clients that you can recognize when somebody's trying to take advantage of you and when there is an honest difference of opinion and you need to smooth it over to maintain the relationship. I shouldn't have left it for this far down the list, but the next item is the client and the product fit. One of the things that I'm guilty of, and I think I'm not the only one, is my reluctance to tell somebody no. As a result, salespeople are always chasing or following up with prospects that have no real intention of ever buying. You need to make it easy for people to say no to you. It saves you time, and it makes them feel better about the interaction. You know, we started this discussion talking about our goal is to create a relationship. A part of that process is that we want to have dialogue that helps us identify if our product or service, in fact, will help the person. That was the turning point for me in my Renaissance experience when I mentally made the shift from making a sales call to meeting somebody to identify whether I had a service that could help them. It changed the whole impression that I had of the meeting. It changed the way I acted. It changed the way I answered questions. It was everything. We want to know if it's a good fit. Not only does the customer fit us, do we fit them? You know, so many times I've sat in management meetings and listened to the finance people say, we should never do any work for that customer again because they don't pay or they're the slowest pay in the world. And then the operations people at the other end of the table go, they're a great customer. I love working for them. Well, what's the right answer here? We don't want to do work for customers for nothing. We have to charge. They have to pay. The fit has to go both ways. They have to meet our standards, and we have to agree to theirs. You know, our standard may be you pay 10 days after we send you the invoice. But hey, if it's a great customer, if they're giving us a lot of work, and if there's some reason that that isn't work for them, would you keep the customer and say, look, net 30 days is okay with me? Yeah, you would. You've got to work on it. So identify that there is a proper fit between what you're selling and what the customer needs. You know, too many times, this section is often referred to as the old sales method was to sell features and benefits. In other words, you said hello, and I started telling you all about the product that I had to offer. Let's say it's a car. I've got a car I'm going to sell you. It gets 75 miles to the gallon. It doesn't cost very much money. It lets you drive in the commuter lane. It looks ugly as all get out. And would you like to buy it? And after I go through this whole pitch, you identify that, hey, I came in because I'm looking for a red convertible to impress my girlfriend. You're not interested in mileage. You're not interested in the fast lane, at least not that fast lane. So identify whether there's a good fit here or not. Teamwork. What is teamwork doing in this conversation about us selling something? Well, let me just tell you an add-on to our Renaissance story. What turned the Renaissance situation around for me was when my friend Rick Franzi, who was just starting out in the forum business at that time, asked me to go on a sales call with him. I tried to tell him that I hated sales calls and was not good at them. He said, that's okay. I don't want you to sell. I just want you to come along, Doug, and share your success stories with the prospects because you've been doing it for over 10 years now. We could make a great team. Guess what? We did make a great team. I love telling stories. He was great at asking for the order and pushing the conversation to some positive action. Even in the home building situation I gave you, I usually set up a follow-up meeting with an interested prospect to meet with the, quote, real salesperson that was going to do the paperwork and open the escrow because I didn't understand all of that. You know, we all have areas that we're not the best at, and the trick is to get a partner or create a team in your company that can deliver great final results to the customer. The customers don't expect you personally to be an expert at everything that has to do with what they're buying from you. So don't be afraid to introduce your team, push their credentials, give them credit. The only thing you don't share with the team is responsibility for mistakes. You stand up and take that bullet all by yourself, just like the Secret Service. So teamwork is critical there. All right, as we wind this up here, the last thing is, you know, this is the place on the test that says at the very bottom of the 7th or 8th page of the test, ignore all of the questions above and just answer the following one question. What this is bend all the rules. I'm going to wrap up this discussion with the fact that whatever rules you have, or whatever rules you think I've given you today, you need to be ready to bend, break, or throw them out for the right situation and for the right client. Relationships are never easy. The way to measure them is not to see if everything goes right, but to look at the total relationship, good and bad, and judge that on a whole, it's been workable for both of us. You know, does everybody that's married have nothing but great days? Or do you have some days that maybe aren't as good as others? Maybe you even have some days that just weren't good at all. But you're still married because overall, it's the greatest deal you could find any place around. That's what we're talking about here today. We're talking about sales. We're talking about preparing. We're talking about the attitude that you have in a sales conversation. And most of all, we're talking about the fact that sales is any time you're trying to help someone solve a problem or you're trying to influence them in making a decision. That's what sales is all about. Well, you know, this is the first of what I think is a three-part, may not be three shows, but a three-part discussion, because I have very strong feelings that the skill sets that you need to use to do non-sales sales work are exactly the same as the skill set that you need to provide good customer service and to become great at networking. So next week on the show, I want to tackle customer service and networking and relate them to this conversation and show what the tie-in. In the meantime, I hope that you'll take a look at the conversations that you have. Identify that you are doing more selling than you realized, and think about whether you are doing it well and whether you're prepared and what you might want to do to change it. If you're listening to our podcast, then thanks for visiting our website, The Coaching Perspective. And while you're there, check out our archives for other shows with great guests, not just me, but great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately on an old concept to help you identify and achieve your non-sales sales goals. Have a great evening.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm sold. Sold on The Coaching Perspective, the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, with Master Business Coach Doug Gaveller.